Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Hello, Judy, and hello, listeners. We have a wonderful interview today. We've already done the interview, so that's why we can know to say that. And so we will be getting to that shortly. This podcast is, for those of you who've been listening, you already know this, it's based on my relatively recently published book called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy, and How to Get It Back. And we've been more or less proceeding chapter by chapter through the book. We've deviated from that a few times to have some really interesting interviews where it hasn't exactly followed the course of the book. But we're back on track in terms of the book, and we have found some interviewees that are just wonderfully qualified to be talking about this particular topic. As you'll see, the topic this week is based on the chapter in the book, which is called Why Get Married? And so the people we'll be interviewing are Rabbi Michael Cohen and Allison Hill, a married couple. And so in a bit, we'll be introducing that. But first, I do want to invite our listeners to do the things that people do on social media that helps people find our podcast. And that would be,
we'd like you to comment and rate us on iTunes or Spotify and any place else you get your podcasts. And like us and share us on your posts on social media.
And of course, in terms of getting a hold of the book, we'll just remind you it's available anywhere books are sold. You can get the audiobook or Kindle version from Amazon. You can get the paper copy pretty much any place. You can ask your local bookstore to order it for you. So without further ado, we'll be turning to our interview. The first thing you'll hear will be Judy introducing our guests, and then we'll have the interview, and then we will be back afterward. So I hope you enjoy the interview.
Our guests today are Rabbi Michael M. Cohen and Allison Hill, a married couple from Manchester, Vermont. Rabbi Michael Cohen is a faculty member of the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies and Bennington College, where he teaches courses on conflict resolution, the Bible, and the environment. He is the Rabbi Emeritus of the Israel Congregation in Manchester Center, Vermont. Rabbi Cohen has a regular column in the Jerusalem Post called Letter from America. His novella, Einstein's Rabbi, A Tale of Science and the Soul, was published in 2008. He is a recipient of the Eliav Sartawi Award for Middle East Journalism from the Search for Common Ground. Allison Hill has a BA in psychology and a master's in physical therapy. Most recently, she has worked for the Arava Institute for Environmental Studies, Bennington County Habitat for Humanity, and Neighbor to Neighbor. She is a Justice of the Peace in Manchester, Vermont, and teaches in the Hebrew School at the Israel Congregation of Manchester. Bruce and I have known Michael and Allison for decades. In fact, we each knew them before we knew each other. And Michael was the rabbi who married us. So when we were thinking about a couple to invite to talk about our topic today, why get married, we immediately thought of you. Michael and Allison, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We are delighted.
So we wanted to sort of start off, you know, our theme, Why Get Married, is based on my book. And of course, I know, Michael, you've seen my book. And it's the chapter in the book called Why Get Married. And I start off with some fairly provocative questions. And we thought we would just toss some of these questions your way about the general concept of marriage and want to really hear from each of you. You each have your different points of view on this, I'm sure. So these days, couples live together, buy houses together, have kids together without getting married. And there really isn't any sort of social price to pay for that. You know, there's not a lot of social stigma about those things as there might have been, you know, back when I was in my 20s. And the divorce rate for first marriages is somewhere in the 40 to 45% range, I think. Marriage doesn't guarantee anything. So why should people get married? What do you think?
Great question. I want to caveat by saying, as you mentioned, in terms of, you know, where in some ways the world seems to be going now, you know, marriage is not the only way that people couple up. I will say that though there seems to be a basic human desire to couple up, start in the book of Genesis, where it says a human being should not be alone. What's funny there is first God brings along animals, you know, a dog is a man's best friend, and realizes that's not working. And then Chava, Eve is created, and we get the first heterosexual couple. I want to expand what couples are clearly from that model, but there's clearly for most people this desire to be part of a couple. Again, I want to caveat, people can be single and very fulfilled in their lives. Mm-hmm. So having said that, you know, why get married? For many people, it also works. I mean, it may fail for lots of people. It's interesting, you know, in the Talmud, we have a tractate that's called Kiddushin. We have a large tractate called Gittin, which is about divorce. Being married or being in a relationship is, as you guys know, is hard work with wonderful benefits as well.
You know, indeed, that idea that people want to couple up. I'm spacing out on the name of the anthropologist I often quote, Helen Fisher. It's Helen Fisher, who talks a lot about the anthropology of people coupling up. But the question I'm wondering is, well, what's the thing about marriage? You know, if you look at, for example, same-sex relationships where, you know, the Vermont enacted civil unions first in the country, and there were lots of places that were doing that, but lots of people were saying, yeah, that's great, but it's not marriage. We really want marriage. You know, not everybody wants it, but a lot of people, there was something specifically about marriage. I was just sort of curious. Actually, I want to maybe combine that with a question that's really more about the two of you, like if you feel like talking about it. How did the two of you get together? And then, you know, why did you get married rather than just live together? You could have, in theory, but if you can speak to that.
Well, I was actually going to comment a little bit about the marriage question in the beginning, if I can do that now,
and sure,
then we'll
sure.
move on to the other question. I can be really concrete. And one thing that I'm going to say now in our society, which I think I've been thinking about how much does our desire to get married, or some people's desire to get married, have to do with our society? And our society does give economic benefits to people who are married. So that's one thing. It used to be you couldn't get information about someone in the hospital, or you couldn't go to visit them if you weren't married. And I don't know about the restrictions on that right now. But I wonder, as you said, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to stay together. But I still think that within our society, there is something about taking that step and saying, yes, we are going to sign on the dotted line, and we're going to invite people to something where we are committing to each other. And mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, when you're going through a rocky point, whether that makes any difference in whether people who stay together or not, or whether just the intermeshing of your lives, children, houses, all the sorts of things, whether that is enough of a enough glue to make it as difficult to not stay together as the actual getting married. I don't know. I don't know the statistics on that.
You know, I've seen conflicting research on that very question. There's some research that says, oh, people who are living together are more likely to split up when they encounter difficulties than people who are married. And there's some research actually to the contrary. So it's kind of up in the air on that one. I'm curious, Allison, for you and also for Judy, to sort of invite specifically, would you say there are different, I certainly encounter this in the couples, in the heterosexual couples that I work with. I'm guessing there's a lot of differences from a general woman's perspective than from a man's perspective. So I'm curious if the women in the room want to talk about that.
You mean an advantage to being married?
Yeah, just that you know, what I notice in the couples I work with, mm-hmm. when the question on the floor is one person wants to get married and the other doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, and this is a couple that wants to stay together.
Right.
It is almost invariably the woman wants to get married and the man who doesn't. If I've ever seen it the other way, I don't recall it.
Yeah. Hmm.
So how come? Hey, women, how come?
I think because, at least historically, women have been economically disadvantaged. And there were fewer opportunities. So I think in the past, at least, you know, certainly when I was growing up, the expectation was you're going to grow up, get married, maybe have a job till you have children, and then, you know, stay home and take care of the children. So I think it was an economic advantage for women when so few other venues were available to us. I think women have more opportunities now. And that might be a hesitation on a lot of women's parts to get married because they are out earning men. Do you have any thoughts on that, Allison?
I think I agree with you for certain what you said. I'm trying to think, and maybe that's the reason why, just what you said, the lower economic ability, earning ability. But I don't know whether culturally, just what the way we're raised, I mean, there's all this now on trying to raise boys and girls with the same expectations. You know, you think about just the whole wedding thing, wanting to have a wedding. And if a couple gets married, it's usually the woman who wants to have a big something. And the man is sort of getting dragged along. And there's something just about the mystique of the wedding and the marriage about that. And I'm not sure where that comes from, but I feel like that's out there.
Yeah. I can speak to some of that, I think, from what it seems to me, in not only in my own experience, but in working with lots of people, that I think some aspect, and again, I try this on and see what you think, especially the women in the room, some aspect for women is that public ceremony, the very fact that it's public, is really a crucial part of marriage. That, you know, what I say in my book about marriage basically is the reason to get married is when you realize it's not just about you. It's not even just about you as a couple. You're inviting in your community. You're inviting in the state. You're inviting in God, if you're religious. You're inviting in all kinds of larger systems. And I think that in terms of the things you were talking about protecting women historically, that's part of the protection. And Jewish law, and Michael, you can speak to this with more expertise than we can. You know, Jewish law, the ketubah, is all about protecting the woman, I think. Is that
that's the marriage contract?
The marriage contract, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's whenever I meet a couple before they're getting married, the first time I meet them, one of the first questions I ask them is, why don't you just elope? Mm-hmm. And I say it half in jest, but I'm trying to like pry, like, so why do this public ceremony? Why do this large public event? And then see what, you know, comes out from them and get them to really think. And it goes to the deeper question of your question, you know, why get married also?
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the answers that you hear from couples?
A lot of them, it's about family. It's that circle of family that Bruce just referred to. That's the main thing that comes out. Wanting to share joy with others. Again, you know, sharing outside the circle. Some will mention, you know, the legal benefits of being married. But most of it's about family and friends and sharing that with family and friends.
Mm. Yeah. So let's get back to the question of how did you two meet and get together? And, you know, why did you decide to get married rather than just live together?
Well, the whole getting together is kind of a long story,
which we're happy to tell, but there may not be enough time.
You can edit out what you would like.
We're delighted to hear it. That's that tends to be the interesting stuff, right? So go for it.
Sure. So we, met sometime the last week of August 1976. We were first-year students at UVM, and I noticed Allison really early on. We were both living in the Living Learning Center in two separate programs. And so we developed a friendship during that first year and then into the next year. I then did a two-year solo trip around the world and left UVM. But Allison and I stayed in touch. I actually called her on her birthday from London, from a public phone in London. did it collect and said I would pay for it. That didn't get back to the people who would...
called UVM. He called the phone that was in the middle of the hallway at UVM Collect.
Oh, right. God. And I said, let the UVM people know I'll pay for it. Well, that didn't get back to the UVM people. And they were a little angry at me, but it all worked out in the end. And yeah, I came back and I realized I wanted to have, you know, more than just a friendship with Allison. I wanted something deeper than that. And she, you know, wanted me to, what was it, mature is what you said, darling?
I guess I wasn't quite ready for it at that time.
So I did one of my more mature acts in my life. I said, well, I'm writing you out of my life. So I kind of tried to do that, but wouldn't always succeed.
Kind of evidence of what she was saying there, right?
Right. We graduate UVM and we would stay in touch. We'd send each other a birthday card, you know, every once in a while. Anyhow, some good friends of mine were getting married in Chicago. This is now like 4 years or so afterwards, I guess, something like that. We graduated. And so I called up Allison and said, you know, any chance you could pick me up and could I stay with you? So she said, yes, she picked me up. And we had a lovely time together. And the morning of the wedding, I'm writing the words I'm going to say to my friends. And I'm just sitting and I said, this is who I want there all the time. Like I'd known that for a year. I'm choking up thinking about it. I had known that for years. And I just said it to myself. And then after I left, I wrote her this great poem about going to the Chicago Art Museum, which she proceeded to give to her boyfriend at the time.
I didn't give it. I read it at the time.
And they broke up.
So because of the poem?
Yeah. So then, and I remember saying to my parents, like after I got home, I said, you know, Allison is the woman, you know, I should marry. Like I've known that a long time. Anyhow, fast forward a couple more months now. I'm going to go, I'm in rabbinical college. I'm going to go study in Israel that year. And Allison is, oh, and I invite, World Cup. You want to talk about the World Cup?
So at some point, he invites me to go to the World Cup in Mexico.
Wow. With him.
And
summer of 86.
Yeah, right. Which I declined. I was in the, you know, I couldn't go for work and school reasons. So anyway, I didn't do that. He went off to the World Cup and I was studying physics as a prerequisite for applying to physical therapy school. And I was on a certain page of physics, not paying too much attention, evidently. And all of a sudden, my mind wandered to the fact that Michael Cohen was going to be the person I was going to marry. Mm. Not live with, marry.
Mm. Yeah, you were thinking marriage right from there.
Right from the start, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I tucked that away and got very excited about that. And I can't remember what exactly.
And then
did I
would
tell you that?
You didn't know. You didn't tell me because then I was living in Burlington, Vermont for the summer working at Only Ones Graphics silk screening, which I did a lot when I was at rabbinical college in the summers, come back to Burlington. And I was there for the summer. I was going to leave for Israel for a year of study. And Allison was passing through Burlington on her way to visit her grandparents, or are you just going?
My grandfather.
Yeah. Long story short, so she came over, or she stayed over, and we went to Bove's restaurant, and I made sure not to have the garlic pasta.
Parenthetically, Michael, I remember, because just for our listeners, I mean, I first met you when you were a rabbinical student coming to Beth Jacob Synagogue in Montpelier, where I was living and part of that community. And I remembered knowing when you had been to Bove's and had the garlic. So you did well to have avoided it.
Yes, and I didn't. And then after dinner, we walked down to the lake and we're just sitting there. And out of the blue at one point, I just turned to Alice and I said, have you ever considered marriage, or would you ever consider marrying me? It wasn't like a formal proposal. It was like, would you consider it? Now I figured she was just going to like push me in the lake and say enough. What I didn't know was.
So then I told him about this. At the time I called it a premonition, but I realized that that's a negative thing. So whatever it was that I had, that I was going to marry him. And so I just told him that story.
Oh, I call that a mystical experience.
Okay.
Experience. I've had a few of those in my life, and I refer to those things as mystical experiences, when you just know with certainty that something comes, that voice that comes into your head, and you just know something with such certainty that you can't explain how it got there.
Well, that's exactly what it was. So I like that. I like that terminology. But then we had some things to work out. So, and Michael was leaving to go to Israel, and I was living in Chicago at the time. So we decided,
the two issues. One, you know, Israel's a big part of my life, and being Jewish is a big part of my life. And I mean, at that point, Allison had really no connection to Israel and had very minimal Jewish upbringing. So we decided I was going to go to Israel for the year. And then in December,
and then I was going to come and join him. I was finishing up with some prerequisites for school, and I was going to join him for the next 6 months there in Jerusalem, and then we would see what happened.
It was a great 6 months, and it was really difficult. This kind of is a great example. So within a day or two of Allison arriving, my great uncle, Eddie Hurwitz, of blessed memory, had passed away. He wrote How the Hebrew Language Grew. It was his shloshim. So went to his apartment where Sylvia's, his widow, was still living for Shloshim services. That's the services 30 days after someone dies. And Allison comes along, and like we walk into the door, and it's like auto mincha time. So like I just like beeline to the men, forget Allison is like in a completely different world. She's standing in the middle of the men also. And one of my nieces then, I guess, waved you over, and very nicely, very kindly, very, you know, lovingly. I can tell you, after we left, boy, did I hear it. but it was a great 6 months. We also get bumping up into that issue in various ways. And then we traveled a bit on our way back. And then that summer we spent in Chicago, where I was going to go back to rabbinical college and Allison was going to start PT school in Philly and kind of follow me there. And that was a really difficult summer because that's really where the issues were just like, we were just crashing into them left and right. And it was a really hot summer too. It was just
the Jewish issues, not anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, somehow we survived that. We both drove out to Philly because we had separate cars. And Allison started PT school, like into rabbinical college. And, you know, we came, you know, it was the fall, you know, all the holidays and everything else. And like, you know, around Hanukkah, the end of the year, we went to New York. And our rabbis kept asking us, should we get married? Should we continue with this? And so we ended up going to Le Figaro Cafe on the corner of Bleecker and McDoodle, the corner table, and began the conversation and basically decided, you know, those issues were always going to be there. We felt at that point, after all these years, you know, we had enough of a base of who we are and loved each other and cared for each other. And to follow the other words of advice I give to couples from Rabbi Mick Jagger, you can't always get what you want, but sometimes you find you get what you need. We decided we're getting married. That was the first week of January of 1988. We got married the last week of March of that year. Like,
wow.
Really quickly. Yeah. Have I had anything?
Well, all I'm going to say is, and I actually never thought about this until this conversation, but as you pointed out, when we were looking, are we going to get married? And the whole time that was the question, can we get married? Will we get married? Not let's just keep living together and see what happens. And that's what I think is this, I don't know whether it's the societal issue. Like that's what at the time that we were young, and I think that's changed now, but you're thinking, who are you eventually going to marry? And any person that you date for a while, well, is this someone that I could marry? And that's from my perspective.
Yeah, it was like autopilot. I don't think I gave it a lot of deep thought, truth be told, but it was like breathing. This is what you do. But I think Allison's absolutely right. It's a societal construct.
Yeah. And what I tend to think is that, you know, as you were pointing out, you know, going back to Genesis, I mean, the sense that, of course, we couple up. But I also think it's not merely that we couple up, because that's what living together is. People, you know, I also point out in the book, I mean, marriage, of course, represents a commitment, but obviously it doesn't always work. So you better be committed before you get married, but getting married doesn't make you more committed. You can be committed and not get married. I think we also have this drive to get married. In other words, to involve more than just ourselves, to be part of something bigger. And, you know, what's interesting in your story, as I hear it, is what made it possible. I mean, this is, of course, an oversimplification, but, you know, as you told the story, what made it possible for you to work through the differences you had? Of course, you had differences in background and differences in you know, how you experienced Judaism. What made it possible was that you were already lined up on that question of what marriage meant. You know, you might not say it the same way, but you were already both thinking, well, the question isn't, do I want to get married? The question is, to whom do I want to get married? And then you found each other, and that's, you know, then you work through that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And also, I think the fact that we were, you know, friends for so long, you know, we had mm-hmm. that base, which, you know, is why we're still together after 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I absolutely. It isn't, do I get married? It's to whom do I get married? Completely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I want to shift gears just a little bit and ask you a more general, and this is really, especially for Michael, who's the rabbi in the room. And this is a very general question, but I'm curious how you would answer it. How does Judaism view marriage, and how do Jewish views of marriage differ from, let's say, you know, Catholic or secular views? I'm especially interested in not merely living together or, you know, couplehood, but marriage in particular. I'm just curious what your thoughts are about that.
I mean, in kind of writ large, marriage is one of those holy activities that we've established as a people, that family, marriage, what happens in the home, have lots of moments of kedusha, of holiness. And that's a big piece of what marriage is from the Jewish perspective. You know, we're told not to work on Shabbat. And then, of course, as you know, the Torah doesn't tell us what work is. But if we look in the Torah, we see the building of the Mishkan, and we get these 39 categories.
The tabernacle, yeah.
Shabbat. But what's interesting, you're building the tabernacle, which is a dwelling place for God. That becomes the operative definition of what work is actually in Judaism, is you build a dwelling place for God in the world and in your lives. And I'm going to use it in a very broad sense, but it's about elevating one's life with that perspective. And marriage and the family are really, in many ways, seen through that lens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wonder in terms of kind of comparing that, and I don't think any of us in this conversation is an expert on Catholicism, for example, but, you know, my outsider's impression of Catholic view would include a lot of that, but they would also include the idea that it's whatever the word is, you can't dissolve it, because it's, once you've gone through the sacrament of marriage, it's been sanctified by God and human beings cannot dissolve it. And so they have all sorts of issues that, you know, they allow annulment, but they don't allow divorce.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, Jesus was born a Jew, died a Jew, you know, was a Jew. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things where he goes like up again, where he does actually, often he's fulfilling what's in the Torah. But on that particular issue, he goes against, you know, Moses, who clearly allows for divorce. And it's Jesus who from the very beginning of what still at that point was a sect within Judaism, makes a radical change and has this voice against divorce. It's quite interesting. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we do in these podcasts is we have listeners who've submitted questions mostly through my blog over the time that I've had that. And so we pick out one that is relevant to the topic, and we would love to just bounce that off you if we may. So here comes a listener question.
Okay, you ready? Millie writes, "My boyfriend Pete and I have been together for 6 years, most of that time living together. We're both 28. We get along great, we love each other, have fun together, have a great sex life, and want to grow old together, and we both want kids. In fact, we're thinking of going off birth control in a year or so. What's the problem? I want to get married before I get pregnant. But Pete's parents had an awful marriage and an awful divorce when Pete was 6. They won't be in the same room with each other even now. And he keeps talking about all his guy friends who were doing fine with their girlfriends until they got married, and then everything went to hell. He says, we're fine now. Why should we mess it up? Dr. Chalmer, am I wrong to want to get married? And if I'm not wrong, how can I convince Pete to propose?" So we were going to turn it over to you.
That is an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's like the ultimate question of the dating game, if we all remember the dating game from TV.
Oh, we do.
We're all dating ourselves here.
And I will add, I often hear, just throwing in, I often hear this in my practice. This is a very common situation in my practice.
I'm wondering about, which the listener isn't here, but the children part of it. I mean, the children is a big step, whether you're married or whether you're not married. And he said that his friends who are not married are doing fine, but I don't know whether they do or do not have children, whether they've made that step. So once you have children, does it make a difference if you've gotten married, if you get married or don't get married? That's question.
And you know, I picked out this particular one because I thought it was interesting because it isolates the variables. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of times those things are tied up together. And that's a classic deal breaker. Both of these are classic deal breakers. I mean, but especially the kids one, you know, if one person wants to have kids and is really, really wants that, and the other person really wants to not have kids, that is a classic deal breaker. You can't sort of have kids.
Mm-hmm. But in this one, they both want kids.
That's why I thought it was interesting. It's like, well, and good point. I mean, it is possible his guy friends, you know, when they are having kids, you know, change their minds about getting married. She didn't describe that in the letter.
Right. So we don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I would do is I would ask her, when she says she wants to get married, does she mean, would she be satisfied by just going to a justice of the peace, of which Allison is, and having a ceremony, you know, with the couple and a justice? And would that satisfy her needs? Or is she talking about what we often think about with marriage is, you know, a large wedding that's this huge public statement? Because I wonder for him, if it was just this thing with them and a justice, that might be okay for him because it's not this large public thing. Would that then answer her needs of being married? So that's how I would then take the conversation next and see what they would respond to that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't get that impression from that. I get the impression he doesn't want to stand in front of anybody. You know, he seems a little gun shy because of his experience.
Right. Yeah, that's what she's talking about. His parents, or you know, that it wasn't so much. He of course wasn't around for the wedding, presumably, but the marriage and the divorce. You know, that's he's not saying, you know, they're doing fine until they had a wedding. His friends. He's saying it's the getting married part that he seems to be resisting. Right. You could be right, of course. It could just be. And you know, as you say that, I'm thinking of a couple I worked with a while ago. You know, several years ago, where that seemed to be part of it. At least initially, they were saying, well, he was saying, well, I'm happy to get married, but I can't stand the idea. You know, I have performance anxiety. I can't stand the idea of a big wedding. Yeah. You know what? When we peeled back some of those layers and talked about it, his problem was getting married. It wasn't the wedding. So it's interesting. It could seem that way, and it could be that way, but, you know, you could go either way on that one.
It could be their little secret. I mean that seriously, actually.
Yeah.
My dancers, both of their needs, but I don't know. That's where I would just ask them.
That's an interesting question.
It is an interesting question. Yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, if he's got this expectation that this could happen and they go ahead and do it, you know, so I'm wondering about each person's expectation and which is more likely to be problematic. So is he going to be so worried that they got married and so fearful that he's going to follow in his parents' footsteps that that's what could happen? Or is she going to be so uncomfortable with having children without being married that can, you know, that could skew things.
Yeah, the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Either way.
Yeah.
I've seen that be a deal breaker. I mean, even, you know, that's why this letter I think was interesting, because they do both want kids. But I have seen that very issue. You know, one of them just can't stand the idea of not being married and the other one can't stand the idea of being married.
Right. It
sounds like they need some premarital counseling.
Exactly. I mean, I'm wondering, when I was thinking about this and thinking about the children, I was thinking too, this is a TV show that I'm talking about, and I can't remember what TV show it is, but something happens in the scene. Some external person is talking to this child who's probably about 10 parents and says something about, well, if you had gotten married, blah, blah, blah. The sentence is a little bit vague and the child turns to them and says, you are married, aren't you? And so I'm wondering, you know, like I said, it's a TV show, but it made me wonder whether children also have this expectation that their parents be married. And if they're not married, is there any sort of a stigma or something that a child from our generation, that would have been a very odd thing to have two parents living together and have children who weren't married. So I'm speaking as someone who's in my 60s, as opposed to someone who's grown up later. And I don't know, maybe one of you two know the answer to that question about.
Yeah, I have just out of my experience with younger folks, It seems to be not at all a stigma anymore, at least in lots of cultural territory in this country. It is not a stigma. And you can kind of see that in, you know, celebrities and stuff, you know, they have kids and aren't married and nobody seems to bat an eye. And among the folks I work with, the question about getting married almost seems to be independent of, you know, it's funny when we were young, you would meet somebody, you would exchange names. Sometime along you'd have sex, then perhaps you would decide to get married, then perhaps you would buy a house and or have kids. You know, the last two might be in either order. Now it's they meet, they have sex, they exchange names, maybe they have a kid, maybe they buy a house, and then maybe they get married. You know, it's right. It is sort of interesting that way.
Yeah, I like what you say, though, in the book, when you talk about marriage, you know, covenant versus contract. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes,
maybe,
indeed.
Michael,
you can talk about
that, too.
Yeah, Michael, do you want to comment on that?
I mean, well, covenant, at least in my understanding, has a, you know, a contract is between two people. A covenant is between two people, but there are larger forces at play. Mm-hmm. And that adds, I think, to the weightiness of a breach of a covenant as opposed to just a contract.
Yeah, that's certainly how I was thinking of it. That notion that when you get married, as opposed to, and I don't mean to trivialize the decision to live together and love each other and commit to each other. Those are big things. But when you get married, you are inviting, you're changing your identity in the culture in ways you don't do when you're just living with someone. And it's that difference. It's that it's a commitment you've made to yourself, to others, and of course to your partner. Whereas a contract, which again, I don't want to trivialize, you know, a ketubah the marriage contract is really covering the contractual part of that. It's saying, well, look, this is, we're going to make sure, you know, the man is committing traditionally to say, if I divorce you, I can't leave you destitute. You know, it's those are contractual kinds of obligations. And marriage certainly includes that. But the difference between marriage and civil unions, for example, is precisely that covenantal aspect. There's something sacred about it in ways that a civil union is really important contractual protections, but marriage is about something that is much bigger than everybody.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I mean, and there's also the wonderful Jewish tradition of Tanaim, which are conditions. It's a ceremony that can be done before the wedding, where actually a plate is broken, where you kind of write down what you will each do in the wedding or in the marriage itself. So there's that. You have the ketubah, which is the contract, but you also have this other potential aspect, Tanaim, where you also have contractual things, but you can expand it. And I think you're right that those are the contracts, and the ceremony is the covenant. Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. Just yeah. FYI, when we had dealt with my rabbinical college, the Reconstructionist was the first rabbinical college in the world to, you know, an open policy for gay and lesbians. This was in the early 80s. So we dealt with that, you know, heavily when I was there. And then when I got here, civil unions were being, you know, debated, and I was invited to testify in front of the Vermont State House and Senate Judicial Committees on this. And because I had, you know, gone through this at RSC, I had what to say, and I was told that my testimony actually changed votes in favor of civil unions when it came to the vote here in the state of Vermont.
Oh, nice.
So that's really neat.
Historical footnote to that, for what it's worth.
Yeah. I want to give at this moment for our listeners a shout out to the interview we did with the rabbi of the synagogue that Judy and I are part of, Rabbi David Edelson. We did an interview with him. He is a gay rabbi. He was from the Reform movement, not the Reconstructionist movement. Yeah. And he was instrumental in the Reform movement, opening up the door to gay and lesbian rabbis.
Nice. Yeah. Wonderful guy. He's a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So are there other things you'd like to be talking about? What else should we be asking you?
Well, I just have one comment that goes back to the marriage being not just for you, but being for the community and the family. Mm-hmm. I just remember a conversation with one woman who was talking about her son, and the son had started going out with and was going to be moving in with somebody that I knew. And so I said, oh, I hear that they're going to be moving in together and blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, I don't get too attached. They come and go. And so I was just thinking about the wedding, and I'm wondering if when this young man, and as it was, they ended up breaking up and moving out. So she was very right. Mm-hmm. But so I don't know whether that was this particular young man or the family, the parents in particular, not feeling 100%. And I think that's part of what I was asking before, also that may be a change, but some people feeling, you know, it seems like it's going well. They've lived together for this many years, but if they got married, then I'd really feel like this other person is part of the family.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I hear that a lot. Yeah. I'm remembering another couple I worked with a number of years ago where they were in their 50s, I think, and had been together for 25 years. You know, they'd been together a long time, but they weren't married. And they were talking about the stuff that was happening with, I forgot who's one of their extended families, you know, parents and siblings, and how differently they were treated from the married siblings, even if the married siblings hadn't even been married that long. They were just treated differently. You know, marriage ends up meaning something quite different. You know, as you know, when you marry someone, you're not just marrying them. You're marrying their family too. And like it or not, you know, that is a significant part. Another shout out I'll throw in here while I'm giving shameless plugs about our other podcasts. We have one coming up. We're going to be doing the interview in a couple of weeks with, I think I won't say the name just because you never know. If it doesn't come off, then I don't want to make promises we won't fulfill. Yeah, Bli Neder, as we say, and, you know, without vowing. But anyway, we have an interview scheduled with someone who wrote a book about family estrangement. And how traumatic that is for, he's a sociologist and he's writing about how traumatic that is for so many families. So listeners, you can look for that coming up in a few weeks as well.
So I have a picture of Allison actually from that year we lived in Jerusalem together. And underneath it, there's a fortune from a Chinese fortune cookie that I slipped under the photo, and it says, stop searching forever. Happiness is just next to you.
Wow. There you go. Mystical experience.
So again, anything else, any other topics you wish we had asked you?
Only say that, you know, marriage is work. I don't think you're ever going to find your perfect partner that where everything lines up. And I think we have these, you know, delusions that sometimes how, you know, marriage is presented, particularly in popular culture or in other areas. And I think, so those realistic expectations always need mm-hmm. to be there, but it's the real test, I think, is whether you've got that foundation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As you point that out, Michael, it is so interesting because that sense of your partner being perfect, I think, is founded on a lot of the same things that mean you people who value marriage will tend to view their partners as if they're perfect, even if they might not have thought so before they knew them. Do you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. it's like when you fall in love with someone, they become the most beautiful person. I mean, if that's true for you, then you've got a good shot at marriage. It's, you know, when I fell in love with Judy, it's like she became the perfect person for me. You know, yes, of course, we still have to deal with our two separate personalities and, you know, the fact that we don't agree on absolutely everything. But that sense of commitment to something larger than us, you know, I sort of feel like, yeah, I'm the marrying kind in that way, you know, that sense that, well, of course, in committing to her, I'm kind of committing to that notion that she is perfect for me. You know, yeah, life presents bumps along the way, but she's still perfect for me. There's something, maybe I'm getting mystical there too. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always, you know, in Judah, we call the Beshert, you know, it was meant to be. We have that notion mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. There's one kind of big topic of which I have no answers for, but when I think about why get married? And I think about what if we had a culture where marriage was not part of it? What would that culture look like? Would people be, you know, would there be less commitment? Would there be people starting households and breaking up and changing at more regularity? What, you know, if we were to separate that out, I think it's an interesting thing to think about. I have absolutely no idea. None of us do, because we don't live in that sort of, not just our culture, but all of the Western cultures.
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a really interesting way of thinking it. It makes me think about Helen Fisher again, because she writes about lots of different cultures and from both a modern perspective by comparison and also comparing what's known through archaeology and even other species, you know, our primate cousins. And so she kind of addresses, in a sense, you know, there are some cultures where there isn't the kind of lifetime commitment type marriage where, you know, her sense is the way marriage evolved just from an anthropological perspective is that when women stood up, you know what I mean? When our species stood up, women's hands were tied up, holding the baby instead of the baby holding onto her fur on her back. And all of a sudden she needed help. And so that we evolved this way of people committing to each other, at least for the duration of having kids. But what goes along with that from Helen Fisher's perspective is clandestine adultery. So that what worked well for women was sort of a public commitment to one man who would then hang around at least to see his kids be okay, but then clandestine adultery because she could benefit from other men doing her favors in exchange for sex. I mean, it's a very different perspective from how we usually think about it. So that, you know, that's kind of a way of, she didn't enunciate the question the way you did, but I think it sort of addresses it in some parallel ways, but that's a great question.
Yes. Sounds interesting. I should read her work.
I think it's I'm trying to remember the title of the book. I think the one, I've only read one book by her. I think it's Anatomy of Love or something like that. Huh. Anyway, you can check out her work.
Yeah, when you mention, you know, raising children, I think about, you know, the early kibbutzim in Israel where, you know, classically, you know, the kids were in kids' houses and the parents didn't have a lot to do with them. Mm-hmm. And as kibbutzim developed, they all got rid of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's a whole interesting, you know, dynamic and understanding of what the nuclear family is there. And again, I want to be very careful. I'm talking about, you know, a nuclear family and people can have models of families, but that sense of wanting the children under the roof is very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for doing this. This has really been delightful.
Thank you for asking us.
Thank you for having us. It has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, this has been great. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Michael and Allison. And If you have questions that you'd like to pose to us or to any of our guests, please email them to bruce@brucechalmer.com or visit brucechalmer.com.
And when you visit brucechalmer.com, if you go to the podcast tab, you will note that in addition to asking you for questions for us to cover on the program, there's also a place there where you can suggest yourself or someone else to be a guest on our podcast. And we've really enjoyed the guests we've had, and we're always looking for folks who would be a good fit for the program. We have some really interesting interviews coming up. I think I mentioned in the interview, I don't want to promise anything until it actually happens, but we've got some really cool topics and interviewees coming up. So, Judy, tell us about some of the next topics we'll be talking about on the podcast.
Okay, so we'll be talking about sex, good sex, and sacred sex, and more on how to deal with infidelity.
And, of course, any other topics, especially if you suggest them. So let me just mention the book again, just for you to look out for that. You can find a link to that, by the way, to purchase the book on brucechalmer.com. The name of the book is Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy, and How to Get It Back. And as we've said, we would like you to comment on our social media posts and rate the podcast and do the sort of things that people do that will help people find our podcast. And of course, tell your friends about it.
And with the holidays coming up, it does make a great gift.
Yes, it does. Well, the book does. And I suppose telling people about the podcast does as well.
Mm-hmm.
So until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.